Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
So today we want to talk about the things that you can do if you've got to the point where your child is really distressed before going to school, masking during the day, and perhaps that anxiety is now spreading into other areas of life. Maybe you're finding that they don't want to even leave the house in general.
Yeah, maybe you're at the point where professionals are beginning to take notice, but even so, nothing happens quickly. You might be wondering, what can you do now to help your child while you're waiting for support?
And if that's where you are right now, we've been there, and this episode is definitely for you. I remember actually a time, and it was that journey to school, the battle to get your child into the car. And that's what we were doing at that time, not really realizing what was going on, if this was just a phase. I do remember my child refusing to leave the car and kicking the car seats and just clinging onto the door. I think that's really when I realized that this was real distress.
Yeah, and I think it can be hard because I think some people will say, oh, it's separation anxiety and it's quite normal for that age. And you're questioning, is this normal? Because I can see most people going in, they might be a little bit jittery. But yeah, we've certainly had all morning, not going, I'm not going, I'm not going. And you get them in the car. We only live a few minutes from the school. We could actually walk, but I used to take my child in the car because I knew that would be easier and quicker. But it seemed ridiculous that we didn't walk, but it was the best way to get them in. Those days are just exhausting, aren't they?
Yeah, completely. And I don't know about you, but I found that it spread very quickly from being school related to being life related. I'm not even sure if it, I think it started with the school, but I can still remember this meeting, one of the first meetings I had with an inclusion officer. And it was actually made out to me like, well, you are going to have to now go to a meeting with an inclusion officer. This is a bad thing. There's a bad thing. And I remember them describing my child as having EBSA. And I remember saying, but it's not just school that they're avoiding. It's life in general. It's their day-to-day existence is really hard. And I think at that time as well, there's a bit of shame that you're made to feel like you are not able to get your child into school. One teacher did say to me, is it you?
Wow.
Could this be you? And asked me to try getting someone else to bring my child in. So I think for parents and carers, there's a lot of emotions around this time too. You can feel really alone, like you're the only one that's going through it. And I still remember feeling like that.
Yeah, me too. We had to go through into a different entrance, and that just alone, that was within a few days of starting school. I was all excited, starting school, so lovely to see them all coming out, they're so cute. And then within a few days, no, you have to come in a different way. Oh, separate from all the other parents. Oh, okay, this feels a bit strange. Why are we being singled out?
We had to try different entrances too.
But just to say, there will be other people like you.
Yeah.
You will see them.
Yeah, that's it.
And they will
it.
probably become your friends.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's when you are dawdling outside, isn't it? You come to see those other people and you're like, oh, I never knew this group existed.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
just it's not just me, I'm in a new gang now.
Exactly.
The hard thing about being in the situation right at the beginning is that by the time things start moving, things have often got a lot worse at home, at school. The support comes in later, and it's such a shame because if that support had been in place 1 or 2 years earlier for children, when those signs of struggle were just appearing, you feel like maybe they wouldn't be in such a bad place as they are now. And that place takes a lot of digging out from. And I think along with that comes guilt. Could I have done something differently? I don't know if you came across any of those
Yeah,
feelings.
I think, yeah, definitely. And I think there's this sort of thinking that they wait for the child to get to crisis point before they will take action. And that is something that I just find incredibly frustrating. It is something in the send reforms, I think, that they're trying to work on, certainly on paper, whether it happens in practice. We'll see.
Yeah, and now it's very much like your child has to break first before support will be given. And if that support could be given a couple of years earlier, then these children might not have to break.
Yeah, because there's so much work that has to go into getting them out of that point when they get to that point where they're not going to school at all, and then life in general is becoming difficult. It takes so much time to recover from that and then build them back up again to where they were.
It does. One of my children spent a year in an alternative provision, just therapeutic,
Yeah.
after the trauma of the school placement breaking down.
You think if the support had been in place right at the beginning when there were just a few signs of some difficulties,
Because there are signs, there are
there
always
are, there really are.
signs. One of my children certainly had obvious signs from about two, but yet it was, oh, it took to a year four.
Yeah.
To a full breakdown before people went, oh, okay, there's something up here. Even though you've been trying with different services or trying to get help. And I think that's really frustrating for parents and carers.
Yeah, it is. I certainly look back now with the knowledge that I have, and I think, wow, it was so obvious. From before two, it was obvious, but only
Yeah.
now, because I know what I know. But at the time, first child, didn't have a clue.
It's looking back at reports, isn't it, with a different lens. We took one of my children to see a private occupational therapist because we were so concerned about their eating. And I was seeing everything in separate boxes at that time. So we saw this woman to help with that. And she wrote a report. I didn't pay too much attention to it at the time. But when I looked back on it, when he was in crisis and we were going through all the paediatrician appointments, the autism assessments, and she'd highlighted so many aspects that were autism. I thought, oh, she recognized it. I'd
Was it
so
not pointed
yeah.
out to you at that point? No.
No, it
I wonder
wasn't.
why there's a reluctance to as well. Is it because of the age
Yeah.
or something? I don't know.
Maybe. Certainly with the eating, we'd been told by the GP, oh, they'll grow out of it. I can tell you right now, there's no growing out of it yet. And that is 8 years on. So we should talk about what can you do when you're in this period where everything's breaking down, your child is in a state and you're on waiting lists basically. So maybe people are starting to pay attention, but nothing's happening quickly and you don't know what to do right now. What can you do?
Yeah.
I learned that if your child is on the SEN register, the school receive extra funding each year that would be used to support them accessing education via an alternative provision. But the school, I believe, would need to apply to the provision and use this funding. If you're in the UK and you're listening to this, there is guidance on this on the gov.uk website, which might be worth checking out. We will put a link in the show notes. In fact, we'll put links to everything that we talk about in the show notes so you can just go through. Because there's also some really good information that was shared with me, which is on the IPSI website about the legal obligations of the LA. So basically, what that says is that the LA has a legal duty to secure suitable full-time alternative education for those children of compulsory school age who, by reason of illness, exclusion, or otherwise, may not for any period receive suitable education unless such arrangements are made for them. And this is Section 19 of the Education Act 1996. And the thing is, this applies whether or not your child has an EHC plan. And again, IPSI has further details on the website, which is about getting temporary education put in place. And that's not something I found was volunteered.
Yeah, I remember raising it with the school too, and then not really getting a proper response about whether or not we were on the SEN register or not. I'm not sure I ever had that answered.
No, I think my child was on the SEN register at that time, but then it's all very hazy about how that money's used, isn't it? And I think it's often swallowed up into sort of general running costs. So it's not always, yes, your child has this amount that can be used.
Yeah, I think that's the classic lack of funding for schools
Yeah.
generally, isn't it?
Yeah.
Another place that can be really helpful is Sendias. They offer free, confidential, and impartial advice for young people with special educational needs and disabilities. I found them really helpful. I spoke to one person in particular who was really helpful. I did have a couple of conversations with not so helpful people, but I did get to that one person. So it's worth persevering and speaking to others.
I agree. I had a couple of really useful conversations with them, and it was at a point where I wasn't sure if it would just be best to deregister my child. I didn't know what the options were, and the school had suggested to me that I would be better off at home. Nobody was saying to me what the alternatives are. And I think that's also really hard because it's not like you can just find that out really easily. There's no roadmap. You're just figuring it all out bit by bit. And Sendyas were helpful. And one of the things they said to me was, don't deregister. They gave some really helpful advice. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. It's worth talking to Sendyas.
With my child, when things were really breaking down with school, really not being able to attend, my child was on a very reduced timetable and I was struggling to work at the time. We did get alternative provision put in place after. That was a big fight as well, though, because the council told me there weren't any places at the alternative provisions. But what they didn't know is I'd made my own inquiries during the school holidays and found three places that would take him.
That's another thing, isn't it? The deception that goes on. And I know I'm having a quite sensitive week with it, which we'll talk about later on another episode. But you don't realise that you will be lied to.
I feel like that's quite standard,
I think it
and
is quite
it's
standard.
really, really bad and shocking.
It is.
And unexpected as well, because they can seem so nice and supportive, and then it can be completely false.
That's my experience right now. Yeah, everybody doesn't want to give you what's going to be most beneficial for your child. So I think that you need to be aware of that if you're in this situation. There's other agendas, and I think essentially they're financially based agendas, but that's what you're going to come across. So it's often, in our experience, I think it's that you need to be pushing for what your child needs.
And alternative provisions vary greatly. So the one that we were allocated actually was not suitable. So we only ended up going for a day. I did take my child to another place that was just setting up as an alternative provision, but that was a private arrangement when my child had been excluded from school on a couple of occasions. So just to get him out somewhere
But
nice.
that means one of the things I know that I was really concerned about. So you've got all this going on, you're fighting to try to get them what they need, but you've also got this child who's really struggling and you're trying to support your child. And oftentimes that's huge anxiety that the child is dealing with. And I think it can be hard again to know where you turn, where to get the help with the anxiety, particularly if they're really young. So I would say my child at this time was around 8. Something somebody recommended to me was the horse course, which is an equine intervention. Certainly in the UK, they've got different centres. And I raised it with the school. Is this a possibility? Okay, so no alternative provision right now, but my child is so anxious. What can I be doing that's going to be positive for them right now? And I said I'd heard of the horse course. And the school didn't push back on that because I believe there was funding that they could tap into somehow for that, so it didn't impact them. However, for my youngest child, it was felt that it wasn't suitable. But I think funding was given to the school and they were able to access 10 hours of animal therapy at an alternative provision instead.
Okay.
And actually, that was quite beneficial. And later, my second child has also done the horse course. Again, different school, years later, but I had to say, okay, I get that you're saying you can't do anything. Can you get them place on the horse course?
So
Because,
that was
yeah,
from your own research.
other parents told me he'd had children that had done the course and really benefited. What I want parents and carers to take from this is, because you're going to live in different places across the world, there's going to be different things on offer. But it's not usually the schools or the councils that are going to say to you, oh, your child's struggling, they're really anxious, you can do this and this. It's going to be you having to find out, and other parents who are a few steps ahead of you are great resources
Yeah,
for.
they're not going to give you a list of alternative provisions. They just don't do that. Or even specialist schools.
Yeah, definitely not. Nothing is made easy for you as the parent on this journey. And it's like your life isn't hard enough. So, talking about anxiety, when your child is in this state and their nervous system is completely exhausted, what we didn't realize to start with was that even the small everyday things like getting dressed, brushing your teeth, sitting at the table for dinner, That was enough to that can be enough to just push them over the edge at this time. So we had to lower all demands and just scrap all the above.
Yeah, we've had to do this too, and it can be really worrying. Like, if I let this go, what happens next? But actually, we found just lowering those expectations just for a short period can help, and then you can build it back up again.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if either of our children are going through periods of intense anxiety, we now just automatically reduce those demands. But I think once you've been through it once, you know that this is temporary and you can build it back up.
Yeah. And when they're dysregulated too, it can be really tempting to try to talk them through it at the time and reason with them and address the behavior, especially if you're feeling like you're at the end of your tether and maybe you're feeling a bit impatient yourself. It can be really difficult, but what we found most is just the best thing to do is keep words to a minimum, stay nearby, but remain calm and just let them regulate themselves.
Yeah, just be their safe person. Another thing that we noticed with one of our children during this period that we're talking about was that they were very drawn to gaming. And we were still at the point where we didn't know the best way to be handling these behaviors, these refusals. And I had an appointment for my child with a dietitian. So it was completely unrelated, but mentioned that my child was on the pathway and this dietitian was brilliant. He just took time with me. He obviously had an understanding of autism. And one of the things that he advised us was just to let them have unrestricted time on the thing that calms them. In fact, if they're really struggling, direct them towards it. I think the way that we're taught to parent, it's that punishment, you behave, we'll punish you, that kind of thing. And your first instinct can be to take those things away. And you might have even been told to do that.
Especially with screens, there's quite a big thing about screen time, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess it's not always screens, is it? Screens for my child, that was the calming thing, but it could be Lego, it could be drawing, it could be their special interest, whatever that is. But you need to direct them towards that.
Yeah, that doctor was right. It does help with regulation in our experience. And then you revisit when they're calmer.
Yeah, and I know something that you said before is you find movement is particularly helpful for your children.
Yeah, so one of my children has ADHD, and so they need to jump and bounce and swing and spin, and that's how they calm themselves down. So being outside is really helpful. We bought a trampoline for the garden. We have a swing in the garden. We had a mini trampoline in their bedroom as well, which was used quite a lot of time. So directing to that really helped my child to calm down.
Yeah, my children find nature quite healing. At this time, I thought my child cannot cope with going out anywhere because I'd realised that going to town, for example, that was just far too much. But I hadn't actually separated it all out. Another parent suggested to me, try going for a walk in the woods, try going for a walk to the beach. And yeah, that's really beneficial.
Yeah, same for us. We tend to stick to nature type activities and they work the best. Not so many people around, but nature, I think, can really help restore them.
Yeah, and you were saying something really interesting about busy.
Yeah, so I think busyness can be a sensory sensitivity. So if you're in a crowded place, that's an additional thing that their brain needs to process. So if they're struggling with noise or smells, and then you're in a busy atmosphere as well, that can just be too much, too
Yeah,
overwhelming.
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And we do need to talk about the parents as well, because when you're running empty and dealing with all of this, it can be really challenging.
So challenging. This is where I found it really helpful to attend a group and connect with other parents. It was somebody at work who actually said, you need to come along to this group. And she was really kind and generous and yeah, took me along. But also, as we talked about, those parents who are also struggling that you see hovering outside the school with their children, that can be really helpful to connect with them because the isolation can be really hard and there's a lot of grief that comes up. It little things like maybe your child can't go on a trip. I remember that when the whole class went off on the residential, and you realize that life looks a little bit different for your child, but there's a lot of emotions that come up with that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think also it's really important to remind yourself that in periods like this that you're going through that are really hard, you are allowed to stop performing normal life for a little bit. So things like birthday parties or family events, the things where you're all supposed to show up and be fine and be lovely, if you actually find those things are making it worse, you can say no, you can decline those to protect your child and yourself, really, from that stress. I wish I had done more of that. We tried to continue, and there were birthday parties. I remember one, it was just awful. My child couldn't even get in the hall, so we stayed outside. I think that was probably around the point when I realized actually it's okay to say no.
Yeah, and also it doesn't have to be just because based on what your child can cope with, it can be that you don't feel like you can cope with it too, because actually talking them through certain situations and being that supportive person, it takes a lot of energy, and sometimes we just don't have that ourselves, and it's okay just to not go.
Yeah, you're right, definitely.
That's something I definitely do try to do more of these days, is to think about how I'm feeling as well as them, and can I cope?
And if you feel like you are really struggling and this is a lot, because it is a lot, just supporting your child and then fighting councils and schools, it's a lot. So there is support that you can and should tap into through your GP or some charities, or maybe even get some counselling.
I've had counselling and found it really helpful, and I also do my own meditations regularly, and I check in with myself most
Yeah,
days.
it's important to take care of you.
Yeah, and we talk a lot as well, don't we? Because we're treading this path together, so that helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about professionals, that's reminded me. Did you actually get any help for your child before they had a diagnosis? So when, as we've talked about, you on the waiting list, they're like, okay, yeah, I think this child needs an autism or ADHD assessment and they're not attending school, but that waiting list is 2 years. And you're thinking, what the heck do I do in the meantime?
We did get some help from a behavioural nurse because we were really struggling at home and we had a young baby at the time. And I think it was probably because we had the young baby at the same time. It was a lot. So I used to have regular telephone conversations with a really brilliant behavioural nurse. And she sent me lots of handouts about different ways we could support my child, avoiding the word no. I remember there was a whole worksheet about the different ways you can say no without actually saying no, because that was quite a triggering word for my child. So, yeah, and by the time we got to the paediatrician for the diagnosis, the behavioural nurse had so many notes that the paediatrician said she didn't really need to see my child because it was obvious that it was autism. And we also did the early birds course as well, which we were let on to a bit early. You usually have to have a diagnosis, but because we had the support from the behavioural nurse, she kindly wrote a letter to them to say likely to be diagnosed. So they let us on that course, and that was really good.
Yeah, that course is hands down the most useful thing I've ever done. So I think if there's something like that exists in your area, I would certainly recommend taking advantage of it, because it's not just you learn about sort of those things that you were beginning to say about the different ways to say no and things like that, but you also get the support from professionals, and the professionals there have just been the best people that I've come across, and you still get that support from them once you've done the course. You can call them, you can email them, and I really value that
And
now.
they have regular meetings as well that you can go along to after the course as well. So you still have
That's
that
right.
support.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of events or activities outside of school, there are some groups that run family events. We have something called Ascape in our area, and they do some family days where you can meet up and meet other parents in similar situations. We also have arts and sports, which my child attended a few times. So they generally do school holidays. They run various different activities, some art-based, some sports-based ones. And I think they do weekends now from time to time too. So they can be really good. Those ones, they don't necessarily have to have a parent present as long as they've got enough staff. So we were able to have some respite, which was really helpful.
How did you come across them?
We had a family worker at the time, And also the early birds course leaders gave me a list of things that we could explore. The tricky thing we had was that my child was a bit young to be able to attend a lot of these things. So arts and sports was one of the ones that took them from a younger age.
How did you get the family worker?
I believe it came via the school. I think the school contacted the council, and then we had support from a family worker. We went through several different ones, and then once we had the diagnosis, we had a social worker in the team that deal with children who have a diagnosis. And that was the most helpful because the early help we were given wasn't really relevant to our child's needs. It was very general sort of parenting
Yeah.
advice, like reward charts and things.
You're often put on those parenting courses, which I remember I was with a group of parents, and most of them were waiting for autism or ADHD assessments. So those strategies just.
I don't know about you, but it made me feel like I was a really bad parent. I had to go on a course to learn how to be a parent, like it was all my
Yeah.
fault, and that just contributed to the anxiety and the stress of it.
Totally. That is the first port of call.
Yeah.
Usually it's parent blame. And I just don't think it's unusual that you felt like that. I think that's the point. It must be you. Is it you? Let's check out you first, and then
Yeah.
we'll see. Really
Yeah.
rubbish.
Thanks, guys.
If you're in the thick of it, just remember that you know your child better than anyone else. So trust that. Don't let that be swayed. And know that you are their best advocate. However hard that is, you are.
Yeah, and do take the time to look after yourself. There are good days and there are bad days. There are phases, and when you're in the middle of it, it feels like it's never ending.
And the fact that you are fighting for your child, you are trying to get your child what they need, even on the days when it doesn't feel like you're doing enough and you're questioning everything, you really are. Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.